information, news, and entertainment on demand.
WSRadio.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Alrighty, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Oh man, I am so hungry. This is like so appropriate. I am starving, and it's the best thing in the world when we have a guest on who actually knows something about how to satisfy my hunger. And she's got a pretty interesting thing going on here, and I'm super excited about this. This is actually somebody that you know, correct, Mary Goulet?
Yes. She and I were at a weekend workshop together, and nice. I just thought the topic was fascinating. She has a book coming out in March.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's all about food truths and
from farm to table
and surprising ways to shop and eat without guilt and all of that fun stuff. Now, I will be the first to admit that I am the world's worst eater. Like, literally, I will eat damn near anything that you put in front of me. I am not one of those, like, poster children for nutritional excellence. Are you actually a poster child for nutritional excellence.
No. I just like to eat vegetables. And some meat proteins, of course.
Yeah. And Richie, would you say that you are a poster child for nutritional excellence, or is that an exaggeration?
I have the knowledge of it. Whether I apply it or not every day is a different
when
story.
When is Rich running for office?
That's right? Like, so diplomatic.
Just because I have the knowledge doesn't mean I apply my knowledge every day. For the most part, I'm a really good, clean eater.
All right. I still want you to declare your candidacy here sooner rather than later. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's bring Michelle on because we've got a very, very, very important show. We've done a lot of interesting shows here, but I think this is one of the more, let's just call it important. I think this is an important
show.
I think it's important.
Really?
Yeah, because food, I mean, look, who doesn't eat? Well, actually, there are starving people that don't eat. But for the people that eat, this couldn't be more important. So actually, let's just bring Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
I am. Hello.
I tried to warn you, Michelle. Okay, that was Steve
listening
to.
It's a good thing you had me on mute.
Yeah, uh-oh. All right, so let's do this. First of all, for those who don't know you, I mean, you've got a pretty interesting story. Let me have you tell your story. Share with everybody a little bit about your background and how you got into this work around food and Cause Matters and those sort of things.
Sure. Well, I am a farm girl born and bred from southern Michigan. I reside in Indiana today. I'm looking out at my front yard from my office, and I see cows. So that probably gives you a sense that I live in a very different world than all of you. Mm-hmm. I work as a professional speaker and am an author. This is actually my second book, my first book released 4 years ago, and it is called No More Food Fights. And this book, Food Truths from Farm to Table, is due out March, the third week of March, probably. We're still trying to figure that out. And so I'm excited to be with you, talk about reinventing the food conversation today and really trying to bring perspective to help people not fear their food. Because as you all were talking, there's a lot of different ways to eat. There's a lot of different ways to choose food, and there's a lot of different ways to raise food. And none of them are necessarily wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what inspired you to get into this area of work? I mean, obviously you're a farm girl and so on, but there's a lot of farm girls who decided I'm not really going to do much in this arena about education and talking about this subject. So what inspired you to get into this?
Well, I actually started my business about 16 years ago, so I've worn the entrepreneurial hat for quite some time and really thought that it was time to give a voice to the people who feed the world, which pretty much runs counter opposite to most farm folks, because modesty is very prevalent in our business. And so it's not necessarily the most comfortable role, but I think in serving as a bridge and a conduit, if you will, between the farm side of the plate and the food side of the plate, it's an interesting niche. I love what I do. I very much consider it to be serving a calling and trying to help people understand that food really is essential. I mean, there's 7 billion of us that eat every day. Mm-hmm. It's a basic necessity. It's sustenance. It should not be about political maneuvering. It shouldn't be about marketing labels, and it should not be about guilt. And unfortunately, I know a lot of fellow moms out there and dads feel really guilty when they go to the grocery store that they're doing the wrong thing. To me, that's really sad, and that needs to be changed.
So, Michelle, it's a little bit perpetuated by, like, there's, I'm going to say this out loud, Whole Foods, There's Jimbo's here, Sprouts, and now we have this new store, Lazy Acres, that if I'm not buying organic or choosing something that will look beautiful on my plate, maybe I am doing harm to my family.
Well, I don't know that you're doing harm to your family, Mary, because knowing you, I don't think you would do that. But the reality is you look at a company like Whole Foods, and they're a business that certainly is very respectable. They built a brand on marketing, more power to them. But what I wish is when you step back and you look at the big picture, you look at the total food plate, if you will, and you consider the facts are that organic is a production style. So for those of you that aren't on a farm, it's kind of like a hairstyle. Some people choose to have huge hair. I probably tend to be more that way. Some people decide to have sleek, shiny hair. It's a different style. It's a different system. Organic is just one way to raise food, and there's a lot of different ways to raise food. So what I really try to help people understand is that they need to know what their own standards are in the social, ethical, environmental, and health arenas. If you know your standards and your standards are such that you choose to shop at Whole Foods, more power to you. There's no need to feel guilty. But likewise, a mom that is in Illinois that can't afford to go and pay $8 for a gallon of milk shouldn't be made to feel guilty that she goes to a different store and has different standards for her family. Mm-hmm. And we live in America. It seems like we could probably do a little bit better in having the freedom to choose and not condemn each other. Mm-hmm.
So what do you find some of the biggest myths that should be debunked relative to buying organic, not buying organic? I don't even know.
Well, one of the biggest myths when it's specific to organic is food truth number 9 in the book. I actually had 25 food truths. And number 9 is that chemicals are naturally in food and needed to protect it. So one of the things people don't understand is that plants produce chemicals. They actually produce their own pesticides to protect themselves. And when you look at some of the signs of what's happened across plant populations as well as animal populations, it's fascinating to see how plants have actually reinvented themselves. And do farmers of all types apply chemicals? Yes. And the reason why is pretty simple. If you've ever grown a tomato plant, if you've ever grown some herbs outside your kitchen, you probably had bugs. Bugs love fruit and vegetables. That's the reality of it. And the numbers of pests and the numbers of weeds and so forth that plants have to compete against are dumbfounding. So organic farmers use chemicals. Conventional farmers use chemicals. They all go through this massive, massive approval process. And Mary, I know you probably don't want to talk about what you do to your hair, but one of the things that I brought up in the book is I find it really interesting that people that apply chemicals to their own head that largely have not gone through the same approval process refuse to eat plants that supposedly have been laden in chemicals when, in fact, the plants have been laden in chemicals because there's always this withdrawal process. Hmm. So you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's some hypocrisy, or as I call it in the book, peck sniffery. There's a word to look up.
What did you call it?
Peck sniffery.
Yeah. Bless you.
Yeah, it's actually the title of the chapter is, Are We Practicing Peck Sniffery? I mean, we all do, right? So I'm not sure if it was Scott that was talking about being hungry, and I know that there was some discussion, and I think it was from Rich, that you know the right things, you don't always do it. Well, the lead story in my book is about how my daughter and I love to eat Cheetos for breakfast whenever we go on vacation.
Mm.
And the reason why I did that was to share that food is about tradition. My daughter is an athlete. I'm fairly athletic myself. I cook pretty nutritionally. But we have times, like eating Cheetos on vacation, where that's not the standard. The standard is creating a memory and having a tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's okay sometimes to get off the health wagon. It's okay to eat ice cream. You know, where I think we've lost the opportunity when you look at the obesity epidemic in the States is to take responsibility for our choices. Yeah, I eat a lot of chocolate, and I go to the gym a whole lot, too. You know, that's the reality of it. So it's just the peck sniffery thing is a very interesting arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, I mean, given the choices for most families between going home and cooking a home-cooked meal and going into McDonald's and picking up a few Happy Meals, yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. From a convenience standpoint, it's kind of how you, it, you you can't compare the two. I mean, you go in, you spend $10, you feed the family. To cook that any sort of meal at home, I mean, you're going to be spending $20 or more. Or is that a myth about the amount of time and the amount of cost that it takes to really feed that family in a healthy way?
I think one of the interesting things to look at, and we did address this with Food Truth number 21, actually, convenience is reality. It's not always wrong or right. And there are days where certainly you're going to take your family and you're, you know, some moms beat themselves up because they're buying their children sliced apples. I think that's really sad. You know, other people are beating themselves up because they have to stop at the drive-thru. But I think personally that it's about balance and it's about choice. And there are some days where, yeah, we go through the drive-thru or we go to the restaurant because I don't have the time, the energy, or the desire. I think when you look statistically, it's really hard to do a cost comparison, though. Cooking at home is almost always more economical, quite honestly. But the difference that, to me, that determines, again, based on my own family standards, you know, there's clear evidence that if you sit down as a family at your own dinner table and you eat, and all the dietitians that I talked to and interviewing them for the book said that there's clear evidence that shows that when children are involved in cooking, that they appreciate and enjoy mm-hmm. the food and they make better choices.
All right, well, we're going to have to do this one.
To me, that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio as we are talking to Michelle Payne from CauseMatters.com, and we are reinventing food. More right after this.
Much to do, not enough time to get it done? Call on the experts at Another 8 Hours for your business support needs. By partnering with Another 8 Hours, we allow you to focus on the more important matters, like being in front of your clients, doing what you do best, rather than being stuck at a desk poring over paperwork, rummaging through emails, returning phone calls, and struggling to get everything done by yourself. Meanwhile, your family and social life are going down the drain. Go to another8hours.com or call 8 more hours. That's 866-734-6877.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Alrighty, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulsher hanging out with Mary Goulet, Richie Ote, and we're talking to Michelle Payne of CauseMatters.com. And we're looking at food. And, you know, it's a pretty interesting subject that a lot of people just don't want to talk about. And, you know, Michelle, in your book, the new book that's coming out, Food Truths from Farm to Table, 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. I guess the real question is, let me just ask you this, because we get so caught up, as Mary mentioned earlier, you know, about the Whole Foods and those sort of Jimbos and all that natural stuff. Is there really a significant difference between organic and regular food? I just need to know that.
Besides price.
No, would be the answer that it's a different production style, but it's not a different in nutrition. And again, it gets back to what your standards are for your family. And I always encourage people to look at those standards from a health standpoint, from an ethical standpoint, an environmental standpoint, and a social standpoint. I personally do not choose to shop in the organic section, mm-hmm. but I also have friends who do, and I support that as long as they're making their decisions based on their own standards and preferably some science. But the reality is that organic is a production system. It is not a nutritional statement. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the all-natural claim. Well, what's not all-natural, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about Cheetos earlier. Technically, Cheetos could be considered natural. They have cheese in them. Cheese is natural. It's mm-hmm. a mold, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. So thank you. So my diet of Doritos and Cheetos for my kids, along with the occasional Oreo, I mean, that's fine, right? I mean, I think that's ultimately what we're saying. But I guess
balance.
The question is, does it make any sense? Like, are we being tossed this whole song and dance that we should ignore about shopping organic and buying organic? Does it make any sense in your mind? Does it make any sense to spend the extra money? Because it does cost more money.
It does cost more money. And the reason why is because it's from a business standpoint, is not as efficient of a production system. So in the book, I actually interviewed more than 55 contributors, leading experts from farm, ranch, dietetic, food science, and wellness communities. And unequivocally, the farmers that I interviewed were both organic and regular farmers, and they said our organic production is not nearly as high because of the production style. So I think that brings up an interesting standpoint that a lot of folks don't think about, and one of that is one of those is sustainability. So being green is really important, right? I mean, you guys are out on the West Coast. You like to be green, correct?
Mm-hmm. Socially, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not literally, but you sustainability, environmentalism is important and such. So one of the things that people sometimes don't think about is that the waste in organic food production is considerably higher than it is in conventional and regular farming. The perishability of the food typically is significantly higher, meaning that it will go bad a lot sooner. So food waste, which is a huge issue in this country, 40% of the food in the United States is actually thrown away.
Jeez.
And the biggest problem in that is your refrigerator, my refrigerator, our refrigerators at home. But then there's also, when you look at meat, for example, there's a lot more waste. So even in fruits and vegetables, there's more products that are left in the field, because one of the issues that we have with food waste and produce is nobody wants to eat an ugly apple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If there's a blemish, you don't necessarily want that product.
Mm-hmm.
So the sustainability aspect of organic, I think, is a really interesting contrast when you look at the big picture. And because of the fact that I've been involved in growing animals and growing products my entire life, to me that seems inherent. But I also understand that, you know, 98.5% of our population isn't on a farm or ranch today.
Mm-hmm.
So really, my work centers on trying to connect those two worlds and trying to just have a conversation around some of these big picture things.
Hi, Michelle. This is Richard. I actually just grew up the exact opposite of you. Grew up in the city here in San Diego and always kind of wished I was on a farm. So I secretly always gardened and farmed. Like, regardless where I lived, I was always growing something. And I've
sure.
even lately started going into low-income areas and starting to teach them how to do straw bale gardening, so mm-hmm. so they can, you know, I won't go into that whole thing. But you made a comment that really resonated with me, is when someone actually tries to grow something and they see that it's almost like the world is conspiring to crush their plant, you know, like every
yeah.
bug, everything. Like, you don't realize how much is going on until you actually try to do it yourself. And then you start
yeah.
to realize why all these pesticides and why all these things happen. Another thing I noticed, though, is they make their own pesticides, but if you don't grow a healthy plant, it's not as good as creating its own pesticides, right? So there's this whole
yeah.
environment ecosystem that people don't even talk about in the whole process. So it's kind of why I answered with that balanced answer of, yeah, I try to go as green. Like, I go off the clean 15 and the dirty dozen, because I get there's chemicals on all, but some plants absorb it faster. Like, berries absorb chemicals faster. I've seen it and done tests myself. So, like, I don't rely on other things.
Have A-B testing on a berry.
Oh, we do that, right? But I'm also... Steve,
it's a 14-pound strawberry.
You know, I'm a big believer in... We don't... But what almost never hear people do. Do a DNA test. Find out what's bad for you. Don't eat that. Is more important than what's good for you.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you bring up a really valid point, Richard, is that people don't understand about growing food, because if you have, you understand how difficult it is. And as a person who's spent my entire life around animals, it's even more difficult with them, because, you know, it does seem like the universe is conspiring against you at times. But the reality is the technology that's used in food production today is fascinating. So, for example, you mentioned the Dirty Dozen list, and again, everybody has a right to make their own decisions, and I absolutely would advocate for your right to do that, particularly if you're doing DNA testing and so forth and so on. But one of the things that I covered in the book is I don't think people realize the activism that there is, that is, in my mind at least, maybe one of the things conspiring against food production today. Because, as an example, the Environmental Working Group is behind the Dirty Dozen list.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that there's been a great deal of misinformation proliferated from there. And the challenge that I have is I don't think food should be about negativity, right? Mm-hmm. It should be, again, nutrition, sustenance. If you enjoy growing food, then there's a wellness component in there. And I don't know that we have to have all this negativity just to eat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's about memories, too. I didn't think that this would come up, but I was talking to these guys. I help a friend that has an e-commerce store that sells walleye, which is up there by you in the Great Lakes. And that's what we're really selling. We're not selling fish. We're selling the memory of the shore lunch to the person who used to live in Minnesota and now lives in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, right. And it's about the experience. I have a sign hanging over my dining room table that says the fondest memories are made gathered around the table.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Granted, I have a very different perspective on that, and as any of my close friends and probably even Mary from having one meal with me could attest, is I sometimes can not be a pleasant person to eat with because I get really upset when I start looking at all of the menu labels and all of the labels. You know, for example, let's talk about eggs because that's something that lots of folks I know are confused about.
Mm-hmm.
In the labels that aren't eggs, so free range is a big deal to a lot of people, right?
Right.
That's just like chickens just running around doing whatever the hell they want, just laying eggs everywhere. That's what that means? Is that free range?
Well,
is that
they don't lay eggs anywhere because predators wouldn't get them. But they are running around, and there's a system in place. And I'm not against free range. I have people who actually, my neighbors sometimes that I buy eggs from have free range. But here's what you need to know, and this is going to get really gross. So if you get grossed out easily and you're listening, you might want to plug your ears for a minute.
I like eggs.
I know. Am I not going to?
Let me just say this for the record.
No, no, no. Eggs are great. Eggs are healthy. Eggs are wonderful.
They're an
incredible protein building block, as is meat, as is dairy. So please don't misconstrue any of this.
Okay,
but the reality is that eggs are chickens, rather not eggs, are omnivores. So that means they eat both plants and animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're also cannibals.
Oh, my goodness.
So but Mary, this is what, you know, you and I talked a little about, but to me, it is a huge honor and privilege to raise animals so that they can feed us.
Mm-hmm.
And I know very few farmers who do not share that sentiment. But for example, with egg farmers, with chicken farmers, with hogs is another one. Animals eat each other, okay? Mm-hmm. They do terrible things to each other. They're mean to each other if they're not in a system. So while cages sound bad to people who aren't familiar, it's actually, in many ways, much kinder.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah,
and the
point's well taken. And realistically, I think that from this point forward, I think we should have a new mantra, which is what happens on the farm stays on the farm. Like we should know.
We don't tell you anymore.
Exactly.
No.
It's
being educated. This is good.
You know, I mean, I think chicken tastes good. I understand why chickens would eat chickens. I mean, you know, I like chicken.
What does it taste like, chicken?
I like bacon. I understand why a pig would eat a pig. I mean, I get it. Bacon is good.
You'd bite a pig's tail, would you?
You like chicken so much, you'll even eat the embryo.
If you don't turn their tails, pigs bite their tails. Could you imagine walking around having somebody come up and bite your butt?
I not only can I imagine it, I would be happy to have that happen. I mean, so there you go. All right, well let's do this. Give you we got about 30 seconds here before we got to cut out to break, and I know we got some serious stuff we want to cover as well. But if people want more information about the work that you are doing, where's the best place for folks to go?
Well, Food Truths from Farm to Table is now available at Amazon, so you are welcome to pre-order it before the third week of March, or you can visit me at causematters.com or across social media at MPainSpeaker. I'll spell it for you later.
Okay, awesome. All right, we're going to take another break here on Reinvention Radio as we are talking to Michelle Payne from causematters.com, speaking about food and all the truths and myths and fallacies and so on, and chickens, eating chickens. Who knew? All right, guys, we'll be right back here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry,
the book, Virtual Assistant, the series. And it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Reinvention Radio, hanging out with Michelle Payne from Cause Matters, and we are talking about food and the truths and the myths and all of that fun stuff that surrounds what we kind of take for granted. Because I know for me, I take it for granted. I go to the store, there's like, you know, food, which is good. And
right.
And some food is good for you and some food is not. And of course, I've been told, and maybe you've heard this as well, you just kind of walk around the outside aisles of the grocery store and you stay away from the interior aisles and you'll be okay. At least that's one of the things I've heard. Maybe that's a myth or maybe it's truth. But let me ask you this, because I'm not quite sure. There's a lot of folks who are all about this GMO thing and like, you know, GMOs are bad, but like, I mean, reality though, isn't every food like a GMO to someone? Because like Richie said, like the world conspires against you to not be able to grow a tomato in your backyard. Like, you know, every bug, everything, like, you know, the rabbits. And so it's like, don't GMOs just sort of like protect the food and allow it to grow? I mean, are GMOs actually a bad thing?
No, GMOs are not necessarily a bad thing. However, to be correct, not everything is a GMO. There certainly has been a lot of genetic modification that has happened naturally, but not in the true sense of the genetic technology that's out there. It's fascinating because the science behind it is amazing. And when you look, as an example, this is one of the ways that I help people perhaps have a more open mind about biotechnology and genetic biotechnology and gene editing and so forth. Do any of you have diabetic folks in your life?
Yes.
I don't think.
Not anymore. We helped out a little, but yeah, I
did. Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all are pretty lucky then, because most people do. But the case that I like to make is that insulin today is actually a GMO product. The bacteria was modified to produce the insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times people don't realize that the medical advancements that we've had are a direct result of some of this GMO.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very interesting because the first GMO, believe it or not, happened in nature, mm-hmm. in a sweet potato.
Mm.
And okay. it's proven. I actually covered it in the book, and it's fascinating. And then, have any of you been to Hawaii?
Yes.
Yes.
Aww.
So, you like papayas there?
Yes.
Love the papayas in Hawaii, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the papaya business in Hawaii was actually saved because of GMO. And a cucumber gene actually saved papayas, because what happened is they went through this whole problem with a disease. And they finally found the answer in relatively short order at a cucumber gene.
Hmm.
Wow.
And then it went through this huge approval process and became a transgenic papaya, saved a $17 million business in Hawaii.
Well, interesting.
I mean, wouldn't you say there's different levels of what GMO is, too? I mean, people just group so many things in that. Genetically modified, right? Like, so sometimes people are talking about specific genes put in there. Sometimes it's just, it was a modification of a plant. We'd be eating Aztec corn right now. Have you ever ate Aztec corn
before?
Those
are the big chocolate things?
Like, you're not going to like it.
Yeah,
like you crossbreed stuff, and mm-hmm. I mean, I know she knows this, but you crossbreed things, there's something called hybrid vigor. You get the, you know, the best strand of one and cross it with the best strand of another,
mm-hmm.
you get a stronger plant.
It's like the Kennedy family.
In a way, I was going to say the same thing happens to people. I think that's why a lot of people, America's got, you know, that goat hybrid vigor spirit to it, because we're probably the country that crosses the most genes too. I mean, it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
So, Mary, I know you...
There's different levels, though, of what GMO would be, right?
No, I'm going to let Michelle take this one.
All right, you can have that one. Yes, that's true.
I think it's really interesting, because one of the challenges that I had in writing this book was science. One of my degrees is in science. I love science. I have a daughter who's very into science. It's a huge part of our life. But I feel like perhaps Americans and Canadians as well have forgotten what science is about. And because of that, you don't trust what you don't know, right?
Mm.
And so the example that I used when I was at the weekend with Mary was BT, and I unfortunately am not very good at pronouncing this, but it's Bacillus thuringiensis. That's not the correct pronunciation, but it's actually approved as an organic pesticide, okay? And so it's applied on products that need protection and as an insecticide. So organically, it is approved. You take that exact same bacteria, you pull the gene out of it that is the insecticidal gene that kills rootworm, you stick it in a corn plant, and that's bad. I don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the simple analogy that I would offer. I love iPhones. I don't know how many of you are Apple lovers, but I drink Kool-Aid hard. My entire office is Apple. And so what I always ask people is, okay, you take your iPhone, you pull off Evernote, and you put on Dropbox. Is it still an iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course it is. Mm-hmm. Well, a corn plant is still a corn plant just because it's had a gene inserted that naturally protects it from a predator, whatever the insect may be or whatever the chemical may be. If it's naturally protected, why is that bad?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate question. It's certainly an interesting conversation to have, and we're going to, unfortunately, we always seem to run out of time here. Mary, did you have something you wanted to jump in on with? Because actually, I want to play a word association game with Michelle. If you go ahead.
Michelle, I tried to warn you.
Yeah,
go ahead, Steve.
All right, so let's play a word association game. So I want to say some words, and then I want you to tell me the first thing that comes to mind, okay?
Okay, well, what if it's not public?
Okay, here we go. No, it's fine. This is we get the E rating on this, so we're all good. All right, so here we go. Farm to table.
Truth.
Okay. Monsanto.
Company.
Okay. Fairlife Milk.
Another company.
Spam.
Spam? Gross.
Gross. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there you go. All right. I just had to get that out on the table.
So he brought that up a little bit, Michelle, because Kelly was asking what your thought of Fairlife Milk would be. Is that like an Illinois thing?
It actually is an Indiana thing. They're about an hour and a half the road up from me at Fair Oaks Dairy Farm. And as a dairy farm girl, it's been very interesting to watch them. So for those of you that are perhaps a little lactose intolerant, or if you're like me and you need more protein, Fairlife Milk is actually a great product for that. It's processed completely differently. So as I understand it, the proteins are pulled out and put back in. They're put in at a higher level, and they are more digestible to folks who have a hard time digesting milk. Mm-hmm. I like it because it's a lower sugar product. I have a huge sweet tooth, so I have to try to manage that. It's a lower sugar product when it comes to chocolate milk, and it's a higher protein product. So, for example, during cross country, I use it, and milk is an incredible sports recovery drink. Chocolate milk has been proven to be the best sports recovery drink out there. We use it over Gatorade every time.
Wow, who knew?
Huh. Probably more than you wanted.
All right, there we go.
That's an awesome tidbit.
I will pull that out as a soundbite for my children because that will make them unbelievably happy. All right, we're going to have to
Good.
Do this. And unfortunately, we're going to run out of time here. But one more time, if people want more information about you and the work that you're doing, where's the best place for them to go?
You can find me at causematters.com. My social handle is @mpain, so it's P-A-Y-N. Speaker, just like it sounds like S-P-E-A-K-E-R. My book, Food Truth from Farm to Table, is now available for pre-order at Amazon. It has hit #1 new release, so I was really excited about that.
Awesome.
Good for you.
Love to connect with you, so please do and ask me some questions.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been really, really, really cool having you here on the show, and it's a lot. Let me just say this. It's given me some food for thought.
Oh, Jesus.
I was waiting the whole show.
Oh, brother.
But seriously, I mean, it's a really interesting conversation. Obviously, we could go for days on this, and it's such an integral part of our lives that we have to have more discussions around food. Although, that being said, I will not watch some of those movies. Do you know, like the what's that movie? That food? What was there? Was a I don't know.
There's Food
like,
Inc.?
Food Inc., right. That was the one. Like, I refuse to what? Because I don't want to know. Like, I think to some extent, ignorance is kind of bliss for you. But this has been very enlightening.
This is,
very,
she
very
presents
enlightening.
It really well.
She so. Does. All right,
thanks,
guys.
Michelle.
Well, eat well and drink even better. All right, guys. Well, we will talk to you next time here on Reinvention Radio. For those who have been rating, reviewing the podcast, we love you. Talk to you guys next time. Take care.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulscher, visit reinventionradio.com.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulscher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.